GoFundMe today announced that it was removing Israel Folau's fundraising account that aimed to help the former rugby league player with his legal costs. Is this a case of freedom of speech, freedom of religion, or is it just an industrial relations matter? Professor Luke McNamara from the University of New South Wales, who's an expert in racism and racial vilification laws, thinks the issue is not as clear-cut as you would think. Reporter Dominic Giannini found out.
In terms of the Israel Folau case, he's going to go through unfair dismissal under industrial relations law, but free speech isn't really enshrined anywhere clearly under the law. What legal avenues are available if he's following the free speech defence?
I guess he'll try and rely on some conception of free speech, which might have its basis in some other reference point, whether it be international law, so under the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. Article 19 recognises a right to freedom of expression, but it also recognises that that right can be limited by laws to protect other interests. So it's important to recognise right at the beginning that in the Australian context, and indeed in every country in the world, the right to free expression or free speech, however it's articulated, is always subject to limitations of one sort or another, and that needs to be recognised at the beginning of the conversation about free speech. It's not an absolute conception, never has been, almost certainly never will be, and so that needs to be recognised at the beginning.
In terms of international law, what would Australia need to do to enshrine this? Does this go into the Bill of Rights debate?
It does, it does. Australia is a party to the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, but the Australian Parliament has not taken steps to enshrine those provisions in domestic legislation or constitutional form, and that remains a sticking point for Australia internationally. Many states have taken that step, many international states have taken that step, and indeed some jurisdictions at the state level in the Australian context and the territory level have taken that step. But so yes, there is a connection, and so whenever a person raises or asserts a right to free speech in the Australian context, it is important to drill down on two things. What do they mean by the right to free speech? And what's their source of authority for that right which they're asserting?
In terms of quoting from religious documents, can that be classified as hate speech?
The important thing is that to the extent that vilification laws that exist in various parts of Australia make it an offence to engage in conduct which promotes hatred against identified groups, then the inquiry is about the effect that that has. The motivation may be important from the point of view of a defence or exemption that is available to the person who is accused of having engaged in the behaviour, but the mere fact that a person claims that they are citing a religious text won't in and of itself be regarded as a defence or an exemption.
At what stage do your personal comments become public? So if he had mentioned these comments in private, would that have exempted him? Essentially, could they have torn up his contract for that, or is
Look,
it?
I can't speak to the specifics of his contractual obligations, but the public-private issue is especially important in Australian hate speech and vilification law. So the general rule is that whether we're talking about provisions in the New South Wales Anti-Discrimination Act or provisions in the National Racial Discrimination Act, it's only public comments that are potentially caught by restrictions on hate speech. So we are free to say what we like in private conversations, but if we make comments in the public realm, then there are additional restrictions that can apply. If the comments are made in a forum or fora that are accessible by the public, however large that group may be, then it's likely to be regarded as a public comment. What public law recognises is that words can have particular effects, whatever their motivation might be said to be, and the law recognises that comments directed at particular marginalised or vulnerable groups which have been subjected to discrimination or may be subjected to discrimination, there is a particular argument in favour of holding people to a high standard so that we don't perpetuate stereotypes, that we don't perpetuate ill feeling towards particular groups based on their identity. So, you know, if behaviour is regarded as likely to insult, humiliate, intimidate, incite hatred, incite ill feeling, incite ridicule, they're the sorts of reasons why our vilification laws say, well, in those circumstances, it's not okay to say whatever you like. You have a responsibility to consider the effect that those things may have on other people. And if you decide nonetheless to go ahead, then you need to be aware that there may be consequences in terms of the possibilities for legal redress, which are available under various anti-discrimination statutes around the country. The conception of free speech that is often relied upon in these debates tends to assert that we have some absolute freedom to say whatever we like. And it's just misleading. It's a misaccurate characterization of the status quo. Our legal system provides for multiple restrictions on the capacity to say whatever you like. Defamation, insider trading, court suppression orders, offensive language laws, misleading advertising laws, vilification laws, the list is endless. And so this idea that some degree of special restriction is being imposed on people by virtue of their religious views, it doesn't stand up.
Professor Luke McNamara from the University of New South Wales there, ending that report by Dominic Giannini.